RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for another Tech Tuesday here at RCR. Never a dull Tech Tuesday. Just saying. Stephen Sykes is with
that.
Me. Hey, wait for me to introduce you, will you? Stephen Sykes is back with us. Hi, Stephen. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad. I'm reeling a bit. I'm reeling. We'll get to that, why I'm reeling. And I'm sure you're reeling a bit as well as the, as I put it, the genital cuff of, how do I put it, the lack of free speech is being tightened every day. So we'll get to that.
It sure is.
And of course, women in tech, another woman in tech coming up before we're done. But as we like to do, if there's been any feedback, Stephen, who's been knocking on the door, getting in touch?
So somebody has said, you've probably covered this before, but I cannot find it. What is the best search engine to use? E.g., I tried to get information regarding whether the 2020 USA elections were stolen, and all I get is, were they not? Also, what email service provider is best and why? So currently the best search engine is still Brave. If you really, really want to use Google, you can use it by proxy. So it's called findstartpage.com. That will do a Google search via proxy, so you can access it indirectly if you really, really have to. There's a cool software project called Hoogle. That's W-H-O-O-G-L-E. It's a bit of software you can install. And then best email provider, I really like Postio because they collect no personal information about you, not even your name, no phone number. You can provide a phone number later on for if you get yourself into a bind and you've forgotten a password and you need to do some recovery. I also like mailbox.org. There's Mailfence as well. And I had another one up my sleeve that I kind of liked, and the name's forgotten me.
Might come to you before we're done.
It might come to me, yes. That's why I like those, because they don't collect information about people, which could later on be used for purposes that we cannot possibly anticipate.
And if you missed any of that, you can check the replay when it's up, usually within the day of broadcast, and you can play that back and get those details. All right. What else?
So this one kind of affects me too. So, hi there. We've been sent this generic letter from Bluecurrent via email re our smart meter upgrade. Our smart meter is currently 3G and they want to upgrade it to 5G. The meter is located inside our house in the laundry, which is in the middle of the house. So I don't think they'll be going to 5G, more than likely probably 4. This kind of affects me too, because I also got the same generic letter. And so I phoned up Bluecurrent, and the gentleman on the phone was very nice and polite, very civil. And he thought I was phoning up to organize a specific day for which the upgrade could occur, which I guess is a reasonable request, given that, you know, sometimes your meter could be in your house, so access is not straightforward. So I said, no, I'm wishing to arrange cancellation of the upgrade.
Wasn't expecting that then, eh?
Well, he was cool with it. And he goes, yep, I'll arrange it for you. And in the background, I hear tappity tap, tap, tap on the keyboard. And in that generic email you get from Bluecurrent, there's a link there to the FAQ, which I didn't click on because I noticed it had a tracking link in it. So I thought, we'll just go and do this the manual way. And there is a section on the FAQ that says, you know, what if you don't want this upgrade? And it tells you a little bit about it. But so basically, it's cancelled. Eventually, I suspect I will need to have a conversation with my power provider.
Yeah.
But so that story will be to be continued, I think.
To be continued. All right. Anything else? Anyone else been calling?
There was one about, and I think my apologies, but given the time we have available and the things we want to cover today, a decentralized method of communication that's been sent in. So I think we'll talk about that next time.
Okay, you know who you are, so you know that that's coming up probably next week, eh?
Yep.
All right.
That'll happen.
Let's get to some news, some big stories. First of all, you just triggered me on remembering this because Zuckerberg has written that letter to Jim Jordan of the Judiciary Committee in the US, basically fessing up and saying that Facebook was pressured into, well, censoring information about the 2020 election and Hunter Biden's laptop. So he's done that. But I see Kirsten Murfitt, who's got a petition to see the Pfizer contract, and fair enough, was saying, and the weekend just gone, that she was unable to post a link to that petition page on Facebook. It wouldn't let her. So yep. It's still going, man. Still going.
Well, Facebook is like one of the worst things you can use for that reason. But the problem is that that's where most people are.
Yep.
So people need
that.
To, yeah, and people need to stop feeding the beast and go and.
But why would you stop that? There's only one reason you'd stop that.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, it's like if you are prevented from doing that, then that should tell you that you're on the right track.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, now the big story of the weekend just gone, and that is that X is being taken down in Brazil. And just look at some of the details. They started blocking in the weekend Elon Musk's social media platform X, Saturday their time, making it now largely inaccessible on both the web and mobile phones after the company refused to comply with a judge's order. And this is Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes. And if you've seen a picture of him, he looks quite sinister, actually. Elon's come back and said, well, he might make Starlink available to everyone for free. Here's the thing, though. If you access X through a VPN, the fine is $9,000 a day. So this is, it's starting to happen, Stephen, big time. And that's a big country, over 300 million people there.
Yep. So they can tell that you are using a VPN, but not what you're doing through the VPN. Unless you're using a really crappy VPN that does maintain logs. But then again, you can also change your router, and this is something I've been saying for a while, so that you're not using your ISP's VPN. So to me, that's a little bit of fear-mongering. Like if you get, use a VPN, that's trying to put you off using one of the very tools you ought to be using in the first place.
Yeah, but $9,000 a day, fine? I mean, it's a sledgehammer coming down.
And I wonder if they are potentially prepared for the administrative overhead of dealing with all of that.
Well, it just shows you that none of this has gone away and maybe coming to another country near you soon, because it's becoming pretty clear that X is the, as much as you can describe it as such, the free speech platform of the world.
Yes, it is. Yep.
You can't have that.
And as much as, if I can say this politely, Elon Musk is a bit of a renegade. He does what he wants. You may not always agree with what he does, but at the same time, he is not influenced by somebody else. And fortunately, yeah. I think, in my opinion, he is by and large got freedom of speech at his heart.
Yeah. Wow. It'll be interesting. This is so lightweight of me to say. It'll be interesting to see what happens. It will
yeah.
be. It'll be really
yeah.
interesting. Okay, same sort of thing. Pavel Durov, the CEO and inventor of Telegram, along with his brother, being held in France. I think he's he knows the score now, right? He's out on bail for a huge sum. Macron is like doing the Pontius Pilate thing and washing his hands. The judiciary's yeah. independent, though. There's been talk that he thought, this is Pavel Durov, that he was coming, dropping in to have lunch or dinner with Macron. Turned out not to be the case. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, so it's being released, the charges that they were putting on Pavel Durov, and there's a document that says refusal to communicate at the request of competent authorities, which I think is a bit presumptuous.
Competent?
Yeah. Information, right. Information of documents necessary for carrying out and operating interceptions allowed by law. Further goes on to say, providing a cryptology tool, not solely ensuring authentication or integrity monitoring without prior declaration, which in English means, hey, you guys are using an encryption mechanism for the purposes of privacy when we didn't say you could.
And that we can't get into, yeah.
But at the same time, Telegram have rolled their own encryption and conversations and groups are not encrypted, and
right.
direct messages are not encrypted by default unless you turn it on. So, yeah, French President Macron said on X that, quote, France is deeply committed to freedom of expression and communication, to innovation and to the spirit of entrepreneurship. It will remain so. And later on, he says, it is up to the judiciary in full independence to enforce the law. So the funny thing is that the president's kind of a fan of Telegram, uses it himself, but the French judges hate it, which kind of implies there's some internal disagreements going on in the upper echelons of
the. And also the EU hate it because it's used as a communication tool for those involved in the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
Yes, but even Russia
on both sides.
Yes. Russia have since said that the French had better come up with some serious evidence to support the claims, and they have said otherwise there will be a direct attempt to restrict freedom of communication and can even say direct intimidation of the head of a large company, which means there will be politics involved, something that Mr. Macron has denied. That was said by Dmitry Peskov, who was the Russian government spokesman.
Yeah, he is.
So Macron kind of did the typical political, I've said something without saying anything at all. And the weird thing is that Russia has basically tried to tell the Western world the significance and the meaning of privacy, which you wouldn't kind of expect. The United Arab Emirates has taken a significant step by freezing a $10 billion contract when they were going to purchase 80 Dassault Rafale fighter jets from France. And they have said to France that you better treat Durov fairly. And I think this is...
Because he's based in Dubai, isn't he?
Yeah, that's one of his like three or four different citizenships. But Dubai is where he's been residing mostly of late. But it's kind of interesting that I think we've all grown up with the impression that Western democracies have been the pillars of freedom and protection.
No way. Not lately.
But we've had plenty of examples now, and this is a more recent example where this has proven to be an illusion. And it should be quite concerning that a country such as France and indeed the EU is rattling freedom of speech. But it's also crazy to think that, you know, I use the idea of ram raiding cars and picking on the CEO of Toyota, that people were using Toyota. So like,
making him responsible for the ram raids or her, yeah.
Yeah, so like, you know, if somebody hides secrets inside a safe, do you then go after the manufacturer who made the safe to say, hey, you guys are endorsing by making a safe, or would you blame the postal service for delivering a letter that had plans in it for some illegal activity?
Yeah, you should have had some sort of telepathy to know. Tells you is, and it's good for us to know, for a long time, mainstream media, I wish I had a different, I'm getting sick of that term, legacy media, whatever you want to call it, controlled media, has been operating at a level where those who want you to think certain things were content with how it worked. Now it has lost its power, clearly. It's crumbling, it's falling to bits. Look at TVNZ. It's just about to keel over and go out of business. The mouthpiece doesn't work anymore. Now you've got a disruptor mouthpiece that has reared up without that control, without that... massaging of messaging. Do you like that? Massaging of messaging. Without any of those controls anymore, and it's intolerable. So it tells us that this has been going on for a long time. And really, the fight is about, it's an information war. It always has been in the end.
Yes.
And now, it kind of, it's a good thing. They are revealing themselves. You're showing yourself in the light of day, and we can see it. And there's no getting away from it. That's what this tells, well, I'd say me, but I think that's what it tells us. This is what's happening.
It just goes to show how much algae has been growing in the pond.
Yeah, and it's been bumping away for a long time, very predictably. And you can let, you know, some people have their say and let it get a little controversial here and there. But on the whole, you're maintaining a narrative, a message, whatever you want to call it. But now they've lost control, and it's brought them out of the shadows, punching and swinging. We know who they are. We know what they're trying to do. It's just what happens next, which is the unknown. Anyway, that's all I'd say about that. What do I know? But that's my feeling.
Well, I've said for a long time now that what happens in the digital space affects the physical one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll add to that by saying that if you are suspected of up to no good in the physical realm, then a warrant to search or possibly for an arrest would need to be acquired. There would be a due process going on there. But in the digital space, that's circumvented. So you have no, you don't have the same sort of rights.
Yeah, there's no physical trail of anything happening. It's thought stuff now, and that's Orwell. On the subject, Google agrees to fund a California newsroom. Well, that rings alarm bells, doesn't it?
Yeah. So it's been reported that Google has reached a groundbreaking deal with California lawmakers to contribute millions to local newsrooms, aiming to support journalism amid its decline as readers migrate online and advertising dollars evaporate. The agreement also includes a controversial provision for artificial intelligence funding, and Politico report, California emulated a strategy that other countries like Canada have used to try and reverse the journalism industry's decline as readership migrated online and advertising dollars evaporated. Under the deal, the details of which were first reported by Politico on Monday, Google and the state of California would jointly contribute a minimum of $125 million, that's US, of course, over 5 years to support local newsrooms through a non-profit public charity hosted at UC Berkeley's Journalism School.
Berkeley, oh dear.
Google would contribute at least $55 million and state officials would kick in at least $70 million. The search giant would also commit $50 million over 5 years to unspecified existing journalism programs. The deal would also steer millions in tax-exempt private dollars towards an artificial intelligence initiative that people familiar with the negotiations described as an effort to cultivate tech industry buy-in. Funding for artificial intelligence was not included in the bill at the core of negotiations, authored by Assembly member Buffy Wicks. The agreement has Buffy, not the vampire slayer.
Buffy? Okay, all right.
Yeah. Buffy Wicks. The agreement has drawn criticism from a journalist union that had so far championed Wicks' effort. Media Guild of the Western president Matt Pearce, in an email to union members Sunday evening, said such a deal would entrench Google's monopoly power over our newsrooms.
Yeah, well, they can. I mean, you don't say what is expected and what happens to the money.
Well, I think what's expected is they wish to further influence the outcome of the US presidential elections this November.
Yeah, timing's everything, right?
Yep.
Okay. I don't think it's going to work, though. This is the thing. I think that it's tipped too far. Could be wrong, but I think it might have tipped. Hence the urgency to try and, you know, bolt these operations down hard. All right. And what about this one, Microsoft rehash of Windows recall? What's all that about? Because I know we talked about that, I think it was last program, Or was that a screw up they had in their operating system that went out as an update?
Oh no, that was you might be thinking of CrowdStrike.
No, I just remember we talked about Microsoft. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's happening here?
So Windows Recall, as you may recall, was a tool that they created that was supposed to take screenshots of everything you've been doing on the computer.
That's right.
And it scans those screenshots with optical character recognition technology. And then it saves that text and the screenshots in a giant searchable database on your computer. And according to Microsoft, the goal was to help users retrace their steps and dig up information about things they had used on their PCs that they had done in the past. So it's like, when I was doing something, now what was it? I knew there was some context and you type stuff and then it's meant to take you back in time to that point.
Is there a great need for that?
Well, there...
They must think there is.
Their existing search features are pretty not rubbish, which you think somebody with that many years, billions of dollars could actually do stuff well, but that doesn't turn out to be the case, which further emphasizes an argument I've always made that when you pay for support for anything in particular, there's an unjustified point of view, I feel, that you're expecting something better. I mean, that's the expectation, but you don't get it necessarily. Okay. So they're basically rehashing this so that it will operate on a wider variety of machines because there was a certain hardware specification that needed to be available in order to pull this off, but they've kind of widened it. And it was said that Microsoft had realized that, you know, maybe taking screenshots of everyone's computer screens wasn't such a great idea for privacy anyway, but the fact that this went through their minds from a company perspective and then went to go and do it, like, it tells you where their corporate mind is at.
Yeah. I think I got confused because the product's called Recall. I get that now. I was thinking of a product recall. So
okay.
That's where I went wrong. Okay, good to know. Time is what I have to be conscious of here. So let's get on to our next woman in tech. Who are we talking about this week?
Grace Hopper. So she was born on the 9th of December, 1906.
Yeah.
She clocked out January the 1st, 1992, aged 85.
Right.
She was an American computer scientist, mathematician, and a United States Navy Rear Admiral, and she had quite an accolade of awards, including Defense Distinguished Service Medal. She even had a Naval Reserve Medal, Presidential Medal of Freedom, and everything in between. She was the first person to devise the theory of machine-independent programming languages. And then she used this theory to develop something called flowmatic programming, and which led into the COBOL programming language. The independent programming language thing was that back in that day, when you wrote code for a particular machine, if you wanted it to run on some other manufacturer's machine, you had to rewrite the whole thing.
Right.
Because the systems were just so different, you had to rewrite it. So with things like Flowmatic and COBOL, you could run it on different systems. So a bit like Hedy Lamarr, which was the first woman we talked about, she was pretty curious as a kid, and she took things apart, including seven alarm clocks, before her mother realized she was doing it. And then she got restricted to just one. Later in life, she was known for keeping a clock that ran backwards, and she explained she did that by saying that humans are allergic to change. They love to say, we've always done it this way. I try to fight that. That's why I have a clock on my wall that runs counterclockwise.
Yeah.
So her career kicked off in 1944, and she was a member of the Harvard Mark I team computer. By 1940, 9, she had worked at Eckert & Watchley Computer Corporation as a senior mathematician. And she helped first develop UNIVAC, which was the first known large-scale electronic computer to be on the market.
When is that vacuum tubes? Is that where that comes from, vac?
Yes.
Yeah, must do, eh? Yeah.
So Grace Hopper had said that computers should be developed so they could understand programs written using English words rather than symbols, and then have the computer take those and then those programs convert them into machine code. And her idea wasn't accepted for at least 3 years, and she was told that computers could only handle arithmetic and there's no way they could ever understand English. So that's what kickstarted COBOL, which was something that came out of a conference in autumn 1959. There were a bunch of computer experts from industry and governments. They all came together in a two-day conference. That conference was called the Conference of Data Systems Languages, and Grace Hopper was the technical consultant to the committee. And out of that came the new language COBOL. Now, IBM had something similar, which competed with Grace's Flowmatic language. And COBOL actually, because the culture at the time was very anti-IBM, 95% of COBOL actually was Flowmatic, and the remainder ended up being IBM's small influence.
Okay.
So COBOL, you may have never heard of it, but it's a language that is, even now, today, still heavily used by financial institutions. And
is that the language known as C? Because I've heard of C before. No, that's different. Okay.
Yeah, that's different because COBOL stands for Common Business Orientated Language.
Right. Okay.
So.
Sorry, I jumped in and.
No, that's fine. Because
blow your flow, so to speak.
No. With COBOL, you could make statements that were English-based, like subtract income tax from pay. And you could do that instead of using symbols and writing other octal code.
Well, that makes common sense, doesn't it?
It does. But COBOL is still in use today. So, and it's still being deployed in systems as late as 2006. Most COBOL programming language stuff is done purely to maintain existing systems. That said, the language has received updates as late as 2023. And when a language updates, it's a bit like a human language, how it evolves over time. We know we invent new words and new terms for things. So too does programming languages. And because COBOL has been around for so long and it's not that common anymore, the average age of a COBOL programmer is said to be around 40 to 55 years old, depending on which reports you listen to.
Are they going
to
die out eventually?
Well, that is a bit of an issue with technical debt, because the businesses worldwide, taking into account financial institutions, so that means banks, insurance company, there's over 220 billion lines of code written in COBOL, with 70% of all business transactions using COBOL code. So if you are going to take advantage of modern languages, given that you have to deal with something as important as financial transactions, it's not something you can afford to ever get wrong.
No, so you'd have to train new people up.
Well, again, going with the 70% statistic, 70% of universities have said they've stopped teaching it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you can see an awkward moment approaching then.
Yes. So there's a lot of technical debt there.
Technical debt. Is that how you put it? Technical debt. Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a lot of technical effort that's been put in that sort of has to be repaid, because now you have to slowly migrate to more modern languages and things like that. And not all programming languages are good at
Wouldn't AI just invent a new language now? AI could do it.
You really want to trust that?
With your financial transactions? No, I don't know about that.
Yeah, maybe not.
Or your life support machine?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so she's a hell of a contributor, Grace Hopper.
She is. She's magnificent. Grace's final words, she said that the most important thing I've accomplished, other than building the compiler, that was for COBOL, she said, is training young people. They come to me, you know, and say, do you think we can do this? I say, try it. And I back them up. They need that. I keep track of them as they get older, and I stir them up at intervals so that I don't forget to take chances.
Yeah,
cool. Bear in mind that she was told that computers could never understand code written in English for 3 years, and she did it anyway.
Yeah, yeah, that'll give you a certain outlook, wouldn't it, on the naysayers?
Well, in some ways... And I'm speaking from personal experience here. When someone tells me something can't be done, that's waving a red flag at a bull.
Yeah, I like that one too. Yeah, yeah. Bring it on.
Yeah, hold my beer. I'll show you how. We'll make this work.
It's like a challenge. Okay, so Grace Hopper is our woman in tech this week. Have we got any other women in tech that we're going to find out about before we move off that?
Well, I could talk about women in tech for a while, but I thought, you know, maybe I'm thinking maybe next time we won't. And I'm thinking of talking about CAN bus in cars and how this relates to the fact that cars are computers with wheels.
Okay, let's do that. Like next week, eh?
Next week.
All right. Great to catch up again. Thank you, Stephen Sykes. Another Tech Tuesday.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk in a week, all right?
See you then.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.